Well, here we are, 88.3 Southern FM, and we have Jeff Nyssen coming on after the news.
88.3 Southern FM News, brought to you by Hodges Real Estate, Mentone.
I'm Leslie Yeomans. The Immigration Minister, Scott Morrison, says he won't be intimidated by what he calls attention-seeking advocates asking the International Criminal Court to investigate the government's asylum seeker policies. Mr. Morrison says Australia implements policies consistent with domestic laws and international obligations. It comes after Independent MP Andrew Wilkie wrote to the ICC asking it to investigate Prime Minister Tony Abbott, Mr. Morrison and the rest of the Federal Cabinet for crimes against humanity as well as alleged breaches of other conventions.
But I hope that she will respond to this request and will promptly investigate these matters and will ultimately make a recommendation that the names be given to the pretrial chamber and that the International Criminal Court commence proceedings against the Prime Minister and the 19 members of his cabinet.
The Vice Chief of the Defence Force says Australian fighter jets have dropped bombs on suspected Islamic State targets on three occasions. Vice Admiral Ray Griggs has appeared before a Senate estimates hearing today. He's told the hearing RAAF Super Hornets have now flown 56 sorties over Iraq, clocking up more than 400 flying hours, and Islamic State targets have been destroyed.
There have been three missions, multiple sorties, but three missions.
Okay.
Where we have delivered ordnance on targets.
Opposition leader Bill Shorten says we have to ensure disaffected and vulnerable youth aren't being preyed upon by manipulative older people. He was speaking in response to a video message from a Sydney-born teenage jihadist who ran away from his family in Sydney to join the Islamic State terror group in Syria. Abdullah Al-Mir appears in the video alongside IS fighters, threatening Prime Minister Tony Abbott and any nation that stands in the way of IS. A hearing's been told Tasmania's Integrity Commission is taking too long to investigate complaints. Former Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions, Damien Bugg, has criticised the anti-corruption watchdog's performance. The commission was set up just over 3 years ago, and the government's arguing it should be stripped of its investigative powers despite a recent high-profile report into nepotism within the health system. Mr. Bugg's told the committee he was aware of one complaint that was supposed to be dealt with expeditiously, but took 5 months to be triaged before it was even assessed. A Melbourne mother who was due to face court today over the death of her son in her squalid home has died in hospital. The 41-year-old woman and her husband pleaded guilty to reckless conduct endangering her children and failing to register their son's birth. The case was adjourned in July when the woman, who cannot be identified, collapsed while giving evidence. She was due back in the county court to resume her plea hearing today, but police have confirmed she died in hospital last week. In other news, Rosie Batty has told the inquest into the death of her son Luke that she first feared her ex-partner when he threatened to cut her foot off. A drug-affected New South Wales driver's been jailed for at least 6 years for a crash that killed a woman's unborn baby. And two West Australian Liberal MPs have broken ranks with the government to vote for a motion attempting to stop fee increases for gun licences. This is AIR News. Well, Melbourne City's marquee player injury curse has struck again, with Robert Koren ruled out of A-League action until at least December. The Slovenian midfielder suffered a recurrence of a calf muscle injury, and coach John Van Schip says it'll be 4 weeks before he can even resume training. Next year's AFL Grand Final will be held in October, with the league releasing the first round of its 2015 draw. The late finish to the season is because of the late start due to the Cricket World Cup. Carlton and Richmond will kick off round one at the MCG on April 2nd, Easter Thursday. There'll be four games on Easter Saturday, including the Swans hosting Essendon and the Western Bulldogs taking on the West Coast Eagles. On Easter Sunday, there'll be three games, including the Saints hosting Greater Western Sydney, while on Easter Monday, Hawthorn and Geelong will continue their rivalry. And former Wallabies coach Eddie Jones says Australia's fallen behind in organisation and planning as the national team still searches for a coach 48 hours before they're due to fly to Europe for the spring tour. Jones says the protracted process threatens to undermine Australia's reputation as a smart country within the rugby world, and he says the controversy involving Kirtley Beale had been totally bungled. Australian Independent Radio News.
88.3 Southern FM, news and information. You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
88.3 Southern FM, and it's 3:05. You're listening to Nanette Abbott in Spirit of Dreams, and I have right in front of me Jeff Nyson, who's coming to have a bit of a chat to us today. Thanks for coming, Jeff.
Not at all. How are you, Nanette?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very good. Hey, how warm is it out there?
It's gorgeous. Glorious weather. Bring it on.
Oh, I'm not used to it. You know what I mean? Like it's pretty warm in the studio too, but it's fantastic. We're going to have to take the kids down the beach, I reckon, after school.
Down to the beach, indeed. Relish wearing the shorts.
Yeah, what do you think? 27, 28? We should check out the weather, hey?
Should.
Hey, now we've got a bit to chat about today, and I know you've got quite a few people listening too who have been following and sharing and being inspired by your story.
Indeed.
So what we want to, I want to just go through a little bit of a background, yeah, just so people understand sort of where you've come from.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I've got a bit of an HR background as well as my kinesiology, so we can put the two together and somehow I seem to be able to remember people's stories and resumes just like that. But I remember when you first came in, you said to me, basically, you know, your life was in this space where everything was good, you know, successful, chemical engineer.
Yeah, well,
is that right?
Yeah, environmental scientist.
Yep.
Working with chemicals, working on industrial sites, working in the environment in general, and it was going fabulously. I was working in a successful career as an environmental consultant, and
traveling the world.
Yeah, spent a lot of time traveling the world, and having just a fabulous time with my family, enjoying time with them, enjoying time with friends, and you know, I didn't want for anything. I was just happy.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you're a strapping young lad. I mean, just for people out there, you've got to imagine someone. How tall would you be?
6'6" in the old measurement and 198 centimetres in the new.
Yeah.
So quite a tall lad.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, always the first person, I'm sure, to be chosen in teams all the way through. But, yeah. I mean, but what
good
I'm really...
basketball.
Yeah, very good at basketball, I can imagine. And, you know, obviously this would be so unexpected because you were so fit, so healthy. Life was good.
Well, I just had my 40th birthday, and I'd spent a lot of time renovating the house, and that's quite a physical undertaking. As well as that, I was training for a short triathlon. I was training for the Oxfam 100-kilometre walk, and really enjoying being physical and just, you know, living life. As I said, then we got a bit of a shock.
Yeah, so what happened then? You were playing basketball?
I was playing basketball. I played down at Frankston, and I was playing with my brother and a group of young guys. They're all 20, and I'm the old joker in the team running around at 40. And we were just having a bit of fun after the game. And I've jumped up to the ring and held on to it for a moment. And
showing the young lads how it's done.
Well, I was trying to prove to myself as a 40-year-old that I could still touch the ring.
Yeah.
And as I let go of the ring, I felt my shoulder pop. And I've landed.
Ouch.
And I thought, here we go. Here's the I'm on the other side of the hill now of 40. Mm. And so I've got my first major injury. I thought I dislocated my shoulder. And so the ambulance came within 15 minutes, which I was thankful for, and rushed me off to hospital. And they took me straight in and did a couple of x-rays on my shoulder. And in fact, it was Marpi humerus. They found that it wasn't actually dislocated, that the upper humerus bone had completely shattered, which was a mystery to everyone
at the time.
11 o'clock at night when I'd been rushed in.
Yeah. So in other words, that I guess that little moment of trying to prove to the young ones was actually a blessing in disguise.
It was. It was. Mm. Like, at the time, I didn't think it was too much of a blessing. And a lot of people have said that to me. Was it a blessing in disguise? And I thought, well, no, it would have been nicer to go on living without that realisation and let, my disease sleep. But now I see it as a blessing in disguise because I have spoken to a lot of people in my situation and whilst a broken shoulder sounds bad, it could have been a lot worse if it had have been another one of my central or core bones that had been damaged.
Hey, that's a really good... At least you could manage that, couldn't you?
Indeed,
you because they couldn't do anything with it. Is that right?
No, they... they went through the process of understanding what was wrong with my entire body, and that's when I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which is a form of blood cancer. And because of the, I guess, life-challenging issues associated with cancer, they very much prioritised treating and managing the cancer as opposed to managing my shoulder. So that they basically shelved the shoulder, said, don't worry, that'll fix itself, like it did back in medieval days. You've got bigger things to worry about, Jeff.
Yeah. And so what happened to you in that moment? Like, did your world just spin or, like, how did you feel in that moment?
It's shattering to go through that. And I think one of the first things that I did, I turned around to my wife, Sarah, who was there with me, and I just apologized. Yeah. I said, this is going to be a challenging time. And we sat down and just tried to take stock. We went and found a tree out in the park because I'd been diagnosed and it was a two-hour wait until I had my next appointment with the specialist, the hematologist. Yeah. And we just went out, sat under a tree in the sun and contemplated, shared that time together.
It was
to say it was a nice time, it was nice to look back on it, the fact that we had each other to share that time with. But at the same time, we had all manner of things going through our head, just the unknowing of it all.
Mm. Well, from that moment on, nothing was going to be the same, really.
No, it's a pivotal point in your life.
It's a real crossroad.
It's my old life and my new life. Yeah. Up until that point. And I was happy with my old life.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, I was very comfortable. Mm. But I think I got too comfortable and this has proven to, jolt me into my new life, into, everything that I can be now that I've been diagnosed with myeloma.
Yeah. And I'd love to get a little bit more into that actually a bit later on. But what happens from somebody who's out there now who might be in the same boat as you, have just got that diagnosis, and I assume their world would have been turned upside down, and it's like, what now? Could you give them a little bit of an insight into, I mean, obviously there's two streams you went down. One is obviously the medical model, and the other was the complementary medicine, and you coupled the two nicely. So from, I guess, the medical model, what did they say to you? Like, what were the steps after that?
Medical model, it's come a long way, especially in the last 5 to 10 years. There's several new drugs that have now been released onto the market. There's a lot of research going into developing these chemotherapy drugs, and they're very much designed to go in and basically smash your fast-replicating cells, of which cancer is one of them. It is hugely invasive and quite destructive as well. And so it really messes with your body. Support from my wife, Sarah, we decided that we wanted to keep an open mind and try everything. And that's where taking a holistic approach was important for us. And indeed, complementary therapies became a big part of that. I guess the reason why I was driven to do that is because I found that the medical model was disarming. It basically took all the power out of me and away from me. You just ask to sit around, they put drugs in, then they say, now go away and see what happens.
Yeah.
Whereas with the complementary therapies, I found it very empowering to have the opportunity to explore nutrition, to explore mental wellness, to explore kinesiology, as it turned out, using these other therapies to empower me to take control of me and my body and my fate ultimately. So,
and to stay clear on your own personal goals.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Which was, we want to get you in remission.
Indeed. Well, the ultimate goal is cure. It remains to be cure. Unfortunately, with myeloma at the moment, under the medical model, there is no cure. I've still got a long path to walk yet. So,
okay. Well, look, we're just going to listen to, I think you chose this. Snow Patrol. This was
one of my favourites.
This is Jeff's choice, not mine.
hold me responsible. I'm happy to take responsibility.
And we're going
to
play, Snow Patrol and Coldplay and a couple of community announcements. Then we're going to be back, and I'd like to hear a little bit more about, in the end of the day, what that process was with the medical module, which was stem cell therapy. And obviously it's getting a lot of interest at the moment. So let's hear a little bit about, what that process was.
Architects and basset hounds are gathered on the hunting grounds. Though when the forest traps are set, the fox, he won't be wearied yet. Oh no, he's much too nimble, much too smart, too slow. So gather all the hunters round, they'll hatch a plan to bring him down and sketch their strategies on maps. The fox, he won't be hard to catch. With years of stealth and subterfuge, the safest bet is they will lose. He's far too wise to be their catch, and Attenborough is second that. And there's one last bullet in a hunter's gun before he sees what he's become. One last look upon a fox's tail, he'll be no trophy, see no grave. Where goes, who can say? Raise them back to the wall, raise them one man for all. Heart is in the healing, in the hidden of a drum skin. Heart and hand to leave you harder than you came. So well-dressed men in boa hats move quickly on a crowded street, while signals flash a language that only the well-trained eye can see. These men have built a life of lies, of sleight of hand and deep disguise. They'll kill you too if that's the price of serving king and country in the end. Well, it's one last bullet in your golden gun, how callous a man you've become. And one last draw upon your whiskey knee until you have the feeling beat. And that card is yours to play. Beat them once and for all, beat them down to the floor, for the cheating, the misleading, and the bleeding they have caused. Oh, and you're now cold too. How'd that become you?
So quite know how to say how I feel. Those three words are said too much. They're not. Just lay here. Would you lie with me and just forget the world?
Shalom. Are you interested in Russian and Jewish history, traditions, and culture? Tune in to our Russian language program, Shalom, with Igor and Becky every Friday from 11 to 12 for some unique discussions on all things Russian.
Вы слышали это по-английски, а теперь я говорю по-русски. Мы в эфире каждую пятницу с 11 до 12.
This is Southern FM 88.3.
Well, it's 3:23 on this beautiful summer's day, and I have Jeff Nyson in front of me, and we've been talking about his incredible journey, if you've just tuned in. Jeff was diagnosed, how long ago was it?
It was in March.
Yeah, March, okay.
Yeah, I broke my shoulder in February, and then in March had the diagnosis. So.
And is now officially in remission, although obviously we're working on a cure. Mm-hmm. So very positive, but we want to hear a little bit more about his journey. And part of that, what we were just talking about, was the process of stem cell therapy.
Yeah. So I guess there's a couple of steps to the medical model when you're first diagnosed with myeloma. The first step is around the chemo, the induction chemo. And the chemo induction is about reducing the cancer count, if you will.
Mm.
And it really trying to smash the cancer out of you, get it to as low a level as possible, so that that way you can proceed on to the stem cell transplant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the stem cell transplant, what it's designed to do is they give you what I call the atomic bomb of chemos. It's high-dose chemo.
Mm-hmm.
They put it in over an hour, And then it stays within your body for a period of 1 hour. So within 1 hour, it goes through and it basically destroys all of your bone marrow. It destroys the cancer cells, which is important. But it also destroys all of your fast replicating cells, which is, you know, your hair. You often see people who have gone through chemotherapy with hair loss. And that's because hair is one of those fast reprocessing cells that gets taken out in the process.
Getting zapped at the same time.
It does.
How, I have to ask, like, how did that feel? Did you have any symptoms with that, or, like, you know, did they sort of compensate for the symptoms with, you know, I guess other medications, or how did it work?
It's a good question, because they know the symptoms well. One of the challenges is it also destroys your gastrointestinal tract, so it was. It was almost comical. I thought to myself, what am I going to die from here? From the cancer or all of the drugs that they give you at the time? Because the nurse, and fabulous nurse, she walked in with about, you know, I say in just 20, but it would have been between 10 and 20 different drugs.
Wow.
And she just pumps one into you via injection, pumps one into you one after the other, and you know, you really are the crash test dummy at that point, waiting to see what's going to happen.
Wow. Yeah,
it's interesting.
And you know what? The amazing thing about you is you were so, obviously we kept in contact throughout that process, and you were so positive. You know, like, there was not one day, I don't think that I knew of anyway, that you and any way wavered from your sense of belief that this is okay, this is just a process.
Yeah.
You know, is that the chemical engineer in you, or, you know, like, what do you, how did you manage to keep that level of strength?
It's funny, a lot of people ask me about my positivity and so, you know, often commenting on positivity. But to me, positivity can only come about when you know what you're doing. If you're in a world and you're spinning out of control and you have no certainty around where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there, it's really, really challenging. And that's when the uncertainty creeps in. But if you have confidence within yourself, if you have confidence within the people around you, and if you've got a fabulous healing team, then you can take confidence
in
that. You're in it together. You've got that support. And that's where that positivity comes from.
Amazing. So, okay, so you're sitting there just waiting, making sure that, hoping this stuff's going to work.
Yep.
Then what happens then?
Well, it was interesting. It was an interesting feeling, because I'd read widely. I wanted to know, you know, what's this process all about? So I'd read widely and I'd spoken to a lot of people who had experienced it. And most of those people said, look, You've just got to, you know, ride off the next couple of months, because you get hit by a truck. The chemicals go in and they do a lot of damage. They do good, you know, it's positive damage, but it does do damage. So from that point, it was an interesting experience waiting to get hit by a truck. And I guess I was lucky enough, you know, I'm generally a fit person. I didn't get hit by that truck. I think I had a few skid marks on me where it swerved at me, but it missed me.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough not to experience some of the worst
those severe
of the symptoms,
right.
You know, that associated with a gastrointestinal system.
Okay. So lots of noisy, but the potential of for other people could be, you know, severe nausea and things like that.
Nausea, it's diarrhea,
I assume, headaches.
It's getting an infection. That's one of the big challenges, because the chemo drug takes away your immunity, and your white blood cells deplete to zero. Now it's your white blood cells that go and fight infection, and if you have no immunity, you have no ability to fight infection. And that's one of the real concerns of the nursing staff and the medical team, is making sure that you know, the patient doesn't get a secondary infection.
Yes.
And so it's me keeping my head down.
Keeping quiet.
Keeping quiet.
Not as social as normal.
I was a little bit social.
Yeah, I know.
You can't take that away from me.
Yeah, that's right. You were so funny, weren't you? Like, yeah, come and see me. It's okay. Just, you know, if you're not feeling too well.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see you next week sort of thing. I'm like, okay then, you know.
And you know, trying to, you know, I've got two young children, and having them come in and see me as well, you know, trying to keep them as well as we could was the challenge of Sarah, so that they could come in and visit, you know, they could be a part of part of the story. So
yeah, fantastic. Okay, so you got through that and then you get to come home. So how long were you in hospital?
I was in hospital for roughly 15 days.
15 days,
which was a relatively quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. Some people, there's people that do it better, there's people that do it much, much worse. But I feel lucky in that I had a pretty good stay.
Mm. Yeah, that's nice, relaxing. I didn't have to take the kids to school.
I had a lovely view. I had a lovely view.
You had a beautiful view. You did have a nice view. How did you score that?
Well, tune in and not watch another.
Yeah, that's right. It's all about influencing. Hey, okay, so then you get home and then more chemo?
No, from that point on, then it's just a wait and see game.
Just a wait and see.
And this is one of the challenges because they say that everybody's journey through the medical model is independent of the person prior to you, and they don't know what's going to happen.
Okay.
So it's a cross your fingers, cross your toes. Mm. You know, all of the indicators told us the right thing, but you know, now it's just a wait and see undertaking. So which we did. We you know, that being said, I felt good.
Yeah.
I felt very comfortable in myself that I was doing the right things. I felt very comfortable that the medical model was doing the right things by me, and you know, I had a lot of faith in my healing team, including you know, my complementary therapy doctors and help. I just felt that I was doing the right thing.
Amazing. And so I guess what was the worst part? Would it be though that last part of that, you know, those few days that you just had to wait to get that all clear?
Yeah, look, the worst, well, there's getting waiting to get hit by the proverbial truck was a challenging time because, you know, you don't ever want to sit around and wait for bad things to happen. But the uncertainty associated with it all, not knowing, you know, I like certainty. I like, you know, knowing where the path's going to take where I'm at.
How close are we? Are we getting closer or not? You know,
exactly.
You know, cold, warm, hot. Yeah. And there was no way of knowing that.
Other than how I'm feeling, there's no way of knowing that because I had no prior experience. And before I was diagnosed with myeloma, I felt fabulous. I felt great. So it was an interesting time.
Yeah. So, okay, well, that obviously, just for people out there, I just thought they'd be interested in understanding what that process was because, there, like I said, there's a lot of interest in how, you know, stem cell therapy really works. So now there's the flip side, of course, which was the complementary medicine. So what sort of things really resonated with you? What really helped you from that side of the coin?
Sure. There's a lot of books out there that, you know, give other people's experiences on what to do, and they say you've got to do this, got to do that. I guess for me, I quite quickly found kinesiology. I knew nothing about kinesiology prior, and that's been just fabulous for me. I also explored nutrition, and I went and saw a gentleman by the name of Professor Avni Sally. He was extremely helpful for me in guiding me around nutrition, mental well-being, and general wellness. And then I guess I've used it's not necessarily a complementary therapy, but it's something that I've really tapped into with your assistance is communication. What to say to people, how to engage people, how to help people be part of my journey, and how to use communication as a therapy in itself.
Yeah.
And I found it hugely healing to sit down and put my thoughts down on paper. Sometimes, you know, I'm sitting there with tears streaming down my face as I'm typing away.
Yep.
But it's healing because I feel that if I can articulate it, then I can get over it. I can deal with it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It becomes more solid, doesn't it? When it's out of your head, you know, and particularly when people are actually responding, which they are, they're just really supportive of you, aren't they?
Yeah,
like they're getting something that is pretty special.
I guess what I've done is I've taken away the barriers of who I would and wouldn't communicate with. You know, early in the piece, I was really apprehensive to tell people that I've got this disease, and then I was apprehensive to tell them about my feelings because, you know, it could have been construed as a weakness on my behalf. But I think it's turned around, and it's actually been one of my strengths and something that I'm really enjoy doing and, you know, really quite cleansing.
Yeah. Hey, now with the, obviously you did a lot of meditation. I'm particularly interested in that. Now, what I loved about working with you was every night you said, I'm on task. And so you did two meditations, is that right?
Yeah.
So you sort of made that a regular, probably about how long, about half an hour a night, would you say?
It started with a 10-minute session where I downloaded off the internet a meditation, a guided meditation. And that was, that's what I thought meditation was to start with. And then from yourself, I received a chakra clearing meditation session, and that goes for roughly 20 minutes to half an hour. And then when I started using that, then I've been exploring and finding other forms of meditation that I can complement your chakra clearing meditation with. So now I sit down for as much of an hour in some instances and really try and play with it. I also found that it helps me look inwards. It helped me, especially in the early days when I was, you know, when I felt quite sad about my situation and my family situation. I found it really helpful to understand why I felt sad and what I could do about it.
I guess that's the core of how complementary medicine works in relation to dealing with these sort of diseases, and it is about working on the vibrational body, not necessarily the matter or the physical body, and really identifying what that vibration is about, and then, you know, clearing it and softening it and, you know, understanding it. And it's interesting to note that obviously mindfulness is such a well-known concept now, and something that the medical profession is starting to adopt. And I listened to, you know, Dr. Craig Hassard, and he literally, you know, stood up in front of us and said, there is a stem cell, you know, that, you know, telomeres, that is sort of shaped, if you like a little box, and then it's got two little tails on it, you know, of DNA. And they're literally finding that you can reverse the process by mindfulness, by meditation, you know, by obviously spending that time on whatever it is you want to work with, calming down that stress, number one, but also that visualization and how powerful that can be in your own healing. We're really just at the beginning of the journey, aren't we, to understanding, you know, how you can heal your body in so many different ways.
Yeah. People often ask me, how does meditation help? Because, you know, originally, from the outset, they think it's a relaxation tool. But there's so much more to meditation than just relaxation. It gives you the opportunity to really look inside and feel for those energies. And when you are concentrating on the energy and you're doing it in a focused manner, you know, it's like when you're on the edge of sleep. All good ideas pop in. I find good ideas pop into my head when I'm just on the edge of sleep. I've got to wake up and write it down. And it was very similar
like
to
many people out there, I think. We've all got our little book beside our bed table.
You know, I had ideas popping into my head, and when I acted on those ideas, it helped. That was great.
And, you know, for us, what we found, didn't we, is there was, they say a picture means 1,000 words. And for us, we could visualize, you know, this disease as, you know, this sort of, this color. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, that's so powerful if you can get that color right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was sort of like a fungus. It was sort of like an orange with a sort of a, you know, red behind it and a bit of sort of black around the edges. And, you know, that was sort of the energy of the cell.
Yeah, an irregular shaped body sitting within me.
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, for me it was a white light that I would bring in as I breathe and just visualize that going in, hunting down those the fungus, as we call it, and getting rid of it, chucking it out.
Well, we know the mind is a powerful thing, and it can't hurt.
No, that's it.
It's not, you know, it's not going to interfere with any other process.
If anything else, you know, it gives you a bit of time to ponder things, and, you know, it gives you a bit of, you know, it may sound silly, but it gives you some me time to think about yourself and what you're doing. It's really powerful time.
Yeah. So, yeah, from our point, from the Convention Medicine, it is about getting that vibration right, you know, and getting that picture right in your head and then changing it. It was a wonderful analogy, wasn't it, that it was sort of like a fungus, like attached to a tree, do you know what I mean? And sometimes, you know, I do wonder if that's the sort of nature of some cancers. Yeah. And it is, it's about actually not being a comfortable host for that fungus, you know, and just visualizing that, that it's just, you know, it doesn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah,
it's not a comfortable environment.
You want to, as I said, make it uncomfortable so it doesn't want to be a part of me. It wants to disappear.
It wants to disappear. So it's just a visualization, but it can be incredibly powerful. So there we go. So we've got your second request, which is Coldplay. So here we go.
When you try your best, but you don't succeed. When you get what you want, but not what you need. When you feel so tired but you can't sleep, stuck in reverse, and the tears come streaming down your face. When you lose something you can't replace. When you love someone to waste, could it be worse? Lights will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I will try.
RSPCA is seeking donated goods such as clothing, books, kitchenware and toys. Items can be left at the RSPCA Centre, 3 Burwood Highway, Burwood East. Proceeds from the sale of goods will assist the RSPCA Animal Welfare Centre, which can be contacted on 9224 2222.
I'm gonna raise a holler.
You can hear all the best music from the 60s, 70s, 80s and today. Whether you like pop or rock, classical or jazz, Southern FM caters for all music tastes from every era. Tune in to 88.3 FM on your dial to hear the hits, the great hits of the past, present and the future.
88.3 Southern FM, and it's 3:44. We're here with Jeff Nyson in Spirit of Dreams and Nenad Abbott, and we're just talking about, obviously, Jeff's amazing road to recovery. He's officially in remission and starting to love life again. What was that first meal like when you knew that you got the all clear?
Oh, look, it was something that I wanted to share. As soon as I'm the sort of person that likes to talk and communicate and connect with people, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to connect with people. So, you know, I went straight around to my brother's house and my sister-in-law's house and shared it with my family and shared it with my shared it with my family.
Yeah.
We went out for dinner. Oh, look, it's just such a nice feeling because...
Yeah, it must have just been liberating, free.
It is. Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things that I found was that my, not so much my pride, but, you know, I've always felt as though I'm bulletproof. And all of a sudden I've got a disease that screams at me that I'm not bulletproof. But then I beat this disease, I kick it into complete remission, and that's where we're sitting at the moment. And all of a sudden, I started feeling bulletproof again. It's like, I can do this. If I can do this, I can do anything.
Yeah,
that's where we're at the moment. We're thinking, what can we do?
You do need to sit with that. This is you. You did this. So yes, you did find a beautiful team, but you found that team.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You can find a beautiful team and not activate that team. But you inspired all of us. You know, all of us have loved working with you, and there's so much gratitude around you both ways.
Yeah.
You've really attracted this opportunity to yourself. To be in this space. And obviously, I'm sure Sarah must feel the same. Like, she must be out there. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. I'm sure she's listening.
Yeah, we said we'd give you a quick yell. But so tell me about the adventure, though, now that you're in the clear. Like, what are some of the wonderful things that have come out of all this?
I think one of the biggest things that's come out of it for me, well, one, I've had time, and time's been fabulous. It's time at home. I've been unwell with, my shattered shoulder that they weren't going to do anything with, and dealing with the rigors of the chemotherapy and my treatment. And that time I've been able to use as family time, working on my relationship with my kids and giving them the time that they need as little ones. I've had a lot of time to think.
Yeah.
And a lot of things just become glaringly obvious. And what is glaringly obvious to me is that the amount of opportunities out there. I say that I was happy in my past life, in my past normal.
Yep.
And to say that I was happy, I was content. But now that I'm in my new normal and living my new normal, all of a sudden I've taken the blinkers off. I'm open to opportunity. I'm open to the great things that I can be doing, because all of a sudden, I've had the flash of mortality presented to me, and so I want to do as much as I can.
And when
that happens, all of a sudden I want to embrace the opportunities that are there. I want to speak to all the people that I can speak to, both about me and about them and what they're doing. And I want to take the energies that are being presented to me and turn it into something that I can do.
And you already are.
It's interesting, isn't it? That's how I met you.
That's how you. Yeah, that's right. That's how you found yourself at little old Southern FM.
Hey? Well, that's right too.
Did you have a choice? I think I accosted you.
You did. You sent it. I think you sent me a text message and then turned your phone off.
So. Yeah, that's it. Be here. But what about the charity work? I mean, already you blow my mind. I mean, you've been involved in the Leukemia Foundation. Is that right?
Yeah. Look, one of the excuse me. One thing that I have around me is I've got fabulous support. I'm one of nine. As I've got nine or eight siblings. And when I said to...
That's a lot of siblings. Your mum must have been so busy.
You can imagine what the size of the pots that she had to cook in, not to mention the size of our dinner table.
Yeah, it'd be like cooking for a village.
And the mess afterwards. And
but you're all so good at helping her, weren't you?
We are. Of course we are. Of course we are.
So how many boys and how many girls? What was there?
I've got six brothers and two sisters.
Two sisters, right. So poor two sisters.
I was going through a stem cell transplant. I knew I was going to lose my hair, and I thought, let's see what good we can do with this.
Yeah.
And so I said to one of my brothers, we're a competitive lot, I said, I'm going to shave my head, and I want to raise some money for Leukemia Foundation. And one of my brothers said, oh, well, if you're doing it, I'll do it as well. And then another brother... heard that, if he's doing it and he's doing it, well, I'm doing it as well. Then all of a sudden...
Oh, my God.
Well, what was most surprising was my sisters.
Wow.
Both of my sisters said, well, if you're shaving your head, we're cutting our hair too. So all of a sudden there's nine of us.
Nine.
And we're all either shaving our head or cutting our hair. And I messaged Leukemia Foundation and said, look, we want to raise some money. I think we can raise between $2,000 and $5,000, which would be an amazing outcome.
Yeah.
And here we are today having raised nearly $25,000.
$25,000.
Yeah. It's from just that been event. An amazing response.
Really.
People came out of the woodwork and that itself has enabled me to connect with so many people. Mm. All of a sudden, people heard about what we were going through, and not just me. Mm. They heard about what my brothers and my family were going through.
Yep.
And they wanted to bring some positivity, their positivity to it too. Mm. So it's been I guess it's been a process of learning how we can accept help from others as well. That's been a big part of the journey.
Now, the million-dollar question, who looked the best with a shaved head?
I'd love to say me, but no, it's really not me. My sisters, my sisters pulled that off.
Really?
They had post-styling and they look fabulous.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, but geez, that would have been fun. So aren't they from all over the world, though, at the moment? So do they all fly in?
No,
We did it by Skype.
We did it by Skype, and you can take photos as you're Skyping. Oh, brilliant. So I've got photos of the process. It was an amazing experience. It was really bonding.
Incredible. Yeah. And that's how people started to find you, like you say. And not just people you knew, but people outside of your immediate world.
I found people, as I said, who I'd never met before, all of a sudden wanting to be part of our story and donate. Mm. They donated because we set up a Leukemia Foundation webpage. Mm. And all of a sudden people started coming out of the woodwork and the generosity was staggering. Mm. It's just been fabulous.
Mm. So... I guess if someone's out there and they're in your position at the moment, possibly not feeling as positive as you have been feeling. What advice in hindsight would you give to them? You know what I mean, to keep themselves strong.
It's really challenging because it's different for everybody, and I hate reading a book and thinking that I've got to do everything in that book, otherwise I'm not going to be successful in my journey. Mm-hmm. I hate people that come along saying, this is what you've got to do. Mm. What I love, on the other hand, is I love engaging with people and I love putting myself out there, reading as much as I can read. I love listening to people as much as I can listen to them about things, their advice and their suggestions. And then you take all of that information and you meditate on it or you use the energy that comes from that information and the energy that you feel the most...
Align with. Comfortable with.
I find that that's the way I'm meant to go. You know, you wake up in the morning and you think, what am I going to do today? And then all of a sudden something materializes and, you know, you've got to work for that something to happen. It doesn't just materialize by itself. You've got to put yourself out there. But that would be my advice, you know, really... Mm. Put yourself out there. Be open to opportunities. Take off the blinkers, and start living deliberately. Be aware of where you are. Be aware of what you're doing. Be aware of what others are doing around you, and just want to be a part of it.
Mm.
You know.
Mm. it's sort of like, isn't it, it's visualising what's on a day-to-day basis from what I'm hearing from what you're saying is from a day-to-day, but wake up and feel what you need to do out of that content of whatever you've been, you know, whatever you feel inspired to do, I guess. But also then the challenge is actually get up and action it.
Yeah,
do it. So
that's critical.
Know,
you have
get
to
out there and do it.
You have to do it because, you know, if you don't do it for yourself, you can't expect anyone else to do it. You know, at the end of the day, all the doctors, all of your healing team around you, they just want the best for you, and they're all going to help you as much as they can in their space. But you have to lead the charge.
And sometimes, can we get some clarity on it too? I mean, it doesn't mean that you did difficult things every day. It was like sometimes it was as simple as, and you really, there was a moment there where you didn't have a lot of energy, where it was as simple as you need to get out and walk. Like, we're not talking anything too, you know, out there or sciencey. It was as simple as, you know, you need to reclaim that guy that loves to trek through the mountains.
Most definitely.
Do you know what I mean? The guy that loves to walk in a storm. This isn't, you know, something that's impossible. This is something that's very feasible. And it wasn't like you got to go trekking for a day. It was like, you know what, you need to just get out for whatever you can do that day. It could be 10 minutes, it can be half an hour, whatever.
One of the things that you learn is to listen to your body. You're listening to the energies around you. You're listening to, you know, where you need to go. And when you start listening, your body tells you how long you can walk for. You know, I'm in a situation now where, you know, I still suffer from fatigue significantly. And, you know, I try to do a few good things and then I've got to go off and have a snooze to
have a little nap
because my body still has to recover. You know, it's been through quite an ordeal.
Absolutely.
But you know, if you're listening to your body will tell you when to walk more or whether you can walk more, because often you know, you want to walk more, but your body will tell you what you can and can't do.
What I'm trying to say, it's very reachable, isn't it? It's like you say, sometimes it was just simply a walk. Other times it was actually writing.
Yep.
It was, you know, meditating. What else was there? Just even letting people help. That was a big one. Was it like actually receiving?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes saying, you know, you were so used to very capable, again, very fit, very strong. And it was like, sometimes you got to go, you know what? Okay, you can.
I would love your help.
You know, you can help. You know, mow my lawns for me, fine.
Yeah.
You know,
it is.
Open to letting people come in and do some of those things.
It is. People love to help. In a lot of instances, people don't know how to help. It's the people that say, you know, I'm coming over on the weekend and I'm just going to do this for you. So for all those carers out there that, you know, they want to help people, don't ask the patient, you know, or the person that's challenged, you know, what can we do? Tell them what you're going to do for them. But you're absolutely right. It is just little things, and, you know, it's interbedded with a lot of rest, and it's interbedded, I think, in the most part, do the things that you enjoy doing, because, life's short.
So what's next?
It's, for me, real priority. I want to go back to, there's a lot of my past normal life that I love doing and I haven't been able to do. I can't wait to go back to work and go back in. And what I love so much about my work is all the people that I work with. I want to go back and spend time with them and spend time doing what I'm trained to do. I want to continue to write. I want to continue to communicate. If you know, a lot of people will say to me that they're inspired by what I say and what I do, that's just an added bonus for me. I like just putting myself out there. I have to make sure I live deliberately, as I mentioned earlier. You know, being aware of the energies around me and harnessing that energy, taking up those opportunities, and the more people I speak to, all of a sudden people start thinking about ways in which I can help them, and that's what I want to do.
Yeah,
I want to help people.
So if someone wanted to get in contact with you, do you know what I mean, to follow your story, how would they do that? What's the best way of, you know, reading your blogs and, you know, finding out what you're up to?
Well, Facebook. I guess I've used Facebook as my primary medium. And I did that because I had a group of, you know, 20 or 30 friends that I thought I'd communicate with, and now all of a sudden there's a lot more people that are interested in what I'm doing. So look me up on Facebook. It's Jeff Nyson, GEOFF. Nyson, spelt NYSS for Sam, Ian. And that's the best place. You know, send a friend request, or, you know, what I ask people to do is if they like what I'm doing and they want to share their story with me, send me a message. I'd love to hear about it because I'm inspired by so many fabulous people around me, you know. I'm not the first person to have walked this journey. And I won't be the last, but, you know, I want to walk with lots of people doing it, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so that's how you can get in contact with Jeff if you're interested. So it's Jeff Nyson, N-Y-S-S-E-N. Just an absolute incredible man who has, you know, come through with flying colours and I think will be around inspiring us for a long time coming. I'd like to see a book personally, but you know, that's just my personal preference.
we'll see what we can work on.
So have you had a dream?
Have I had a
final
dream?
Question.
All right, I do have a dream.
Considering it is in Spirit of Dreams, what would be your dream?
My dream came to me the day I was diagnosed. Now, I broke my shoulder, and so I couldn't move my shoulder. My shoulder was incapacitated. My dream, and there's no cure for multiple myeloma currently, but you can live a long time with it. My dream is to be dancing the funky chicken at my 80th birthday. It used to be my 60th birthday, but now it's my 80th birthday.
80th, absolutely. And you've just pushed up the bar.
Well, why not push it out there, eh? We only negotiate one way, don't we? And the reason why I say funky chicken is because I'll be moving my shoulder and doing that. It's symbolic for me.
That's right. That shoulder will be working beautifully by then. It'll be well oiled. You'll be doing the funky chicken. Well, that's amazing. And once again, you know, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute delight.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
We would love to hear from you out there if you enjoyed the program. Please, you can either jump on Facebook at New Leaf New Beginnings, or jump on Jeff's Facebook and find out what he's up to.
Yeah, come and find me. One thing I'd like to say is, and I found it particularly poignant, is life isn't waiting for the storm to pass. It's learning to dance in the rain. So get out there and start dancing in the rain.
Love it. Well, we'll be here next week, Wednesday, at 2:33 in Spirit of Dreams. Thanks again, Jeff. It was amazing.
Thanks for having me.
Love you.
Appreciate your time.
88.3 Southern FM News. Brought to you by Hodges Real Estate, Mentone.
I'm Leslie Yeomans. Rosie Batty has told the inquest into her son's death that she was traumatised by her experience with the court system. Luke Batty was 11 years old when he was murdered by his father, Greg Anderson, at Tyab on the Mornington Peninsula in February this year. Ms. Batty's told the court she suffered trauma caused by dealing with the court system over several years to negotiate custody arrangements with Anderson and wondered whether things were ever going to be resolved. Defence officials have confirmed Australian Special Operations soldiers are